to receive weekly mailings of Rabbi Mansour's tapes or to sponsor a tape, call 718-375-1023. To hear Rabbi Mansour's daily halakha or to search the Rabbi's database of halachot, visit www.dailyhalacha.com. That's DAILYHALACHA.com. And now, Rav Mansour.
Good afternoon, ladies. We are studying Perashat Vayechi, which is the last Perashah in the book of Bereshit. In the beginning of the Perashah, we read how Yaakov Avinu is soliciting his son, Yosef, that after Yaakov dies, he wants to be buried in Israel, and he wants to be buried specifically in the Ma'arat HaMachpelah, where his father and grandfather were buried, the plot of land that Abraham Avinu bought many years before, which is in the city of Hebron. But as he's trying to beseech his son in order to fulfill that promise, because it's not such an easy thing, you have to remember they were in Egypt. That means Yosef is going to have to leave. He's the viceroy. It's not so simple for the viceroy of a country just to pick up and go. So he says, please, you have to swear to me, you have to guarantee it, that you're going to bury me in the Ma'arat HaMachpelah. So in the conversation, he says like this, Ve'asita amedi chesed ve'emet, do for me a favor. And then he starts to reminisce. He says, and I want you to know, that when I was leaving a city called Padan, your mother died, Rachel. And she died and I buried her on the road. I buried her on the road of Bethlehem, where she's still buried today, Rachel. And he goes on to explain to his son why he buried Rachel, where he buried her. So the Hachamim say, because Yosef might have claims. Yosef might come along, I have to take you to Ma'arat HaMachpelah. What about my mother? My mother, you couldn't bury her in the Ma'arat HaMachpelah also? You buried her in the middle of a highway? So he comes along and says, I want you to know that I did that because God asked me to do that. That was a divine commandment, because when the Jewish people were going to go into exile, they were going to leave through Bethlehem. And we needed Rachel's grave to be there so she'll see her children being sent into exile, and that inspires her to cry. And it says God is going to answer the tears of Rachel, and eventually when the Jewish people come back to Israel, it's going to be in her merit. So she's positioned exactly where she's supposed to be. If she would be buried in Hebron, she wouldn't have seen that tragic sight of the Jewish people going into exile. So please, Yosef, it was from God. But as he's telling him this, he says, and I'll tell you, from where I buried her to Hebron was not such a far distance. And I don't want you to think that the reason that I didn't bury her was because maybe the roads were wet and it was difficult for me to get there. I want you to know that it was the dry season. The roads were accessible. The distance was close. But I didn't bury her only because God said. So great Rabbi Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz asks, what does Yaakov have to give a whole explanation? Just tell his son Yosef, God told me to do this. Finished. I have to answer to you now. God told me to do it. What does he have to say? And I want you to know, it wasn't because of the distance, because it was right there. It was a couple of mile walk, but it wasn't so difficult. And I want you to know also, it wasn't because the roads were difficult to access. It was easy. Just tell him straight, Yosef, I buried your mother where I buried her, because that's what God said. So he explains like this, which is an important point to know when we're doing mitzvot. A person in life could think he's doing the right thing, but in truth, he's deceiving himself, and really, it's the wrong thing. You know, we might think that we're doing something for the name of God, for the sake of Hashem, for the religion, for the right reasons, but when we analyze it, if we analyze it, we realize that we might be doing it for honor, for glory, for compliments, etc. Yaakov Avinu is psychoanalyzing himself. He's saying, hold it, I know I was L'shem Shamayim. I know there was no other reason why I buried your mother where I buried her. And he went through it. He says, if you think it was because it was too far, it wasn't too far. I could have walked. So that wasn't it. It wasn't because I was trying to be lazy. And it wasn't because it was difficult because of the roads. It was dry. So it must have been the reason why he did it was only for Borei Olam. To show you how careful you have to be in your actions. Even when you're doing something good, you have to make sure that it's good 100%. That there's no ulterior motives. For example, we learned the story, I don't know if we said it here, of Yaakov, when he was greeting Esau for the first time after he met him after 20 years. He's seeing his brother, and he's with his whole family, and he has all his children, and his wives, and he has his daughter Dinah. So it says, Dinah, he took her and he put her in a box, and he covered the box as if it was like a chest, so Esau wouldn't see Dinah. Yaakov was scared, if Esav's going to see Dinah, she wasn't married, maybe, God forbid, Esav's going to want to marry Dinah, and now he's going to have to give his daughter to this Esav. He wasn't interested, so he hit her in a box. Now, we would say that that's a good thing Yaakov Abinu did. He was protecting his daughter. Any normal parent would want to protect the daughter from undesirable. And that's what he was doing. He went to the extreme, put her in a box, so Esav won't be able to look at her. But the Hachamim tell us he got punished for that. The Gemara writes that God tells Yaakov, you didn't want to give her to your brother? Now she's going to end up being taken by a heathen, by a goy. What ended up happening when they went to Shechem? And one of those fellows living in the city of Shechem himself went and raped Dinah. God tells Yaakov, you didn't want to give her this way? Okay, you'll see where she's going to end up. And we ask always the question, what do you mean? He did a good thing. Hazid, what do you want from Yaakov Avinu? He was doing something that was responsible. He wasn't doing something that was wrong. But they explained that even in that right action, they say when he closed the box, says he slammed it shut. So the Hachamim tell us, it was as if to say, I'm not only doing it to protect my daughter, but because there was a little malice intent against Esav. It wasn't 100% only because I want my daughter to be protected. It was a little negatively against my brother Esav. So for that little bad intent, so already Borei Olam holds Yaakov accountable. To show you again, we cannot deceive ourselves when we're doing mitzvot. They tell a story of some students that came to the Gaon from Vilna. They said, Rabbi, we want to open up a yeshiva. The rabbi looked at them, said, you want to open up a yeshiva? Come back next year. Couldn't believe it. They came to get a blessing. Now he's telling them, don't even do it. They come back a year later. Rabbi, we still want to open up the yeshiva. He says, good luck. Open it, you'll be blessed. So they said, Rabbi, you'll forgive us. But why did you delay us a year? He says, when you came last year, I saw you were very excited. I saw you were very motivated. And I was concerned that maybe you were doing it for the wrong reason. I thought that maybe you were interested in glory. Maybe you want to have a yeshiva for your own honor. So I said, let me wait a year. If you're still as passionate a year later, then I know already you're doing it for the right reasons. So from here you see, not everything that looks right and noble is necessarily noble. And therefore Yaakov Avinu is teaching us over here how in this case he knew when he buried Rachel, it was 100% for the sake of God. Because there was no other reasons that could have caused them not to do it. He did not deceive himself. Further in the Perasha, which is probably one of the highlights of the Perasha, we read about the blessings that Yaakov Avinu gave to his grandchildren. We're all familiar with the blessings he gave to his children, but the blessings that he gave to his two grandchildren, specifically Menashe and Ephraim. I'd like to review that story for a second. Yosef brings his children to Yaakov, and he positions them in a certain way in order that it'll be easy for Yaakov to put his right hand on the older one, Menashe, and the left hand on the younger one. It's only normal that Yaakov should bless the older one with his right hand. The right hand is the primary hand. And therefore it's deserving, seemingly, that the older one should get the primary blessing. So he positions them in front of the father perfectly, so it's easy for Yaakov. What happens? The Pasuk says, Sikelet Yadav. Yaakov Abinu, he crosses his hands. And now he puts the right hand on Ephraim and the left hand on Menashe. And on these words, Sikel et Yadav, which means he crossed his hands. Okay, that is the building safe. Everything's fine. The Targum writes, one of the commentaries write, Achkeminun lidohi. He used wisdom when he crossed his hands. There was a wisdom. There was something smart about what he did. Now, we're trying to understand what was so smart about what he did. The simple explanation means he knew what he was doing. He did it b'chokhmah. Don't think Yaakov Avinu got confused. Don't think he got flustered and said, oh, is this Menashin, is Ephraim, and he just went like this because he didn't know what he was doing. You have to know it was thought out, it was planned, it was b'chokhmah. But the Pasuk writes, the reason why he did this, Sikelet Yadav, you know why he crossed? Ki Menashe HaBechor. Because Menashe was the firstborn. The Pasuk doesn't make sense. It should say, even though he was the firstborn. Because he was the firstborn, that's why he crossed his hands? The opposite. So I heard an explanation like this. Why did Yaakov Avinu do that? He had another option. He could have just told Menashe and Ephraim, switch places. Why do you have to play games with crisscross with the hands? Just tell me, you know what, boys? I want you to stand this way and you stand that way. Reposition them. So one explanation they say is because Yaakov Avinu knew the laws of honoring parents. The law says if a father tells somebody to do something, and a grandfather tells the child to do something else, the child must listen to the father. He's obligated to listen to his father over his grandfather. So therefore Yosef tells his children, stand like this. So if Yaakov comes along and says, no, 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 stand like this, he knows they can't listen. So therefore he didn't want to put them in a position to disobey their father. That's one explanation. But another explanation is like this. He didn't want to embarrass Menashe. Imagine, they're standing there now. They're not looking at their grandfather. Their heads are down for the blessing. So probably they didn't even see the crisscross. Because their heads were down when they were getting the beracha. They don't even know what's happening. Yosef sees what's going on. Yosef stopped his father. He said, Dad, what are you doing? You're making a mistake. He said, no, don't worry. It's my son. I know exactly what I'm doing. Yadati bini yadati. It's by design. So they have their heads down. Imagine what it would have done to Menashe if he would have said, please switch around. I want to give Ephraim the main beracha. It would have humiliated him. It would have embarrassed him. So therefore, the wisdom behind the crisscross was that he did it like that in order to save and maintain the dignity of Menashe, as opposed to switching them in positions. He chose to go like this with the crisscross in order that Menashe doesn't get embarrassed that, look, it's blatantly that his grandfather's switching them. From here we learn a great lesson. Yosef didn't know what his father was doing. Dad, you're making a mistake. You're blessing the wrong child. You're giving a priority to the wrong son. He says, don't worry, I know exactly what I'm doing. From here we learn something about Hachamim and their wisdom. And Gedolei Yisrael and the great rabbis of the generation. Not everything that we could see, because we're limited, they could see. Gedolei Yisrael, you have to know, ladies, have X-ray vision. They're able to see from one side to the other side. They're able to predict things that normal people would say, what are they talking about? They're able to see things in the future that nobody would even imagine can happen. And therefore, when Yaakov Avinu sees these two children, he's not looking at two children, he's looking at generations of children. And therefore, he makes an assessment. No, Ephraim needs the main beracha, Menashe gets the secondary beracha. Even Yosef says that. What are you doing? I know exactly what I'm doing. That's the vision that Chachmei Yisrael have. They give an example. Imagine you have five people standing on the street, and there's an event happening 100 yards away. The first person's vision is only able to see 20 yards. The second person, 50 yards. The third person, 70 yards. The next one, 80. And the last one's able to see 120 yards. So they're all squinting, and they're all looking, and they don't see anything. All together, they can't see. He only sees the 50, he goes to 70, they can't see what's going on. Only the one that has the 120-yard vision can accurately describe what's taking place. Our vision is impaired. We're not able to see the world in perfect vision, exactly what's supposed to be, what's going to be. But you have to know, the rabbis, and not all rabbis, But the Gedolei Yisrael, the few chosen great leaders of the generation, have an aerial view of the world. They're able to see things from above, and therefore when they make statements, to us they might sound extreme. So what are they talking about? What are they panicking? What are they making such harsh predictions? We don't see it that way, because we can only see 50 yards in front of our nose. But Chachmei Yisrael are able to project out. And that's why they tell it's a pasuk actually. The pasuk says when it comes to listening and adhering to Hachamim, it says, "Lo tasur min adavar asher yagidu lecha yamin u'smol." Do not sway from what the Hachamim tell us, right or left. That even if they tell you your right is your left and your left is your right, you have to listen. So I saw a nice explanation. Why did they choose right, left? How come they didn't choose north, south? Or how come they didn't choose day and night? That even if they tell you day is night or night is day or north is south and south is north, why do they give the example right, left? Do not sway from what they tell you, yamin u'smol. And the explanation is because north is always north and south is always south. That there's no argument on. North can never be south and south can never be north. And day can never be night, night can never be day. But right and left can change. Your right is not my right. I'm facing you, you're facing me. My right is different than your right. My left is different than your left. And therefore, they're coming to tell you on things that seem to you right. And they come along and say, no, you're looking at it from the wrong angle. It's left. Go with their vision. Go with their assessment. Because they know what they're talking about. It chose right, left, because that's subjective. That depends upon according to where the person is standing. That can change. There can be two answers. There can be two rights. There can be two lefts. And therefore, we have to humble ourselves to their opinion. There's a story once told that happened in the Miri Yeshiva. There was two boys that came down with an illness. God should save us from sickness. Amen. So they came down with a disease, and they went to the Rosh Yeshiva, and they said, we need advice, Hakam, what do we do? Doctors, he says, go to a certain rabbi in a certain town. He's Gadol. Tell him the dilemma. He'll guide you. Whatever he tells you, listen. They accepted. They go down to this rabbi. First they took a visit to the Hafetz Chaim. They got the Hafetz Chaim's blessing. And then they went to the rabbi. And the rabbi heard exactly what they had. He said, okay, this doctor is an expert. Use him. Don't use anybody else but this doctor. Okay, fine. They go to the hospital where he sends them. The first one takes the operation with the doctor. He comes out okay. It was successful. The second one's on the operating table. They're ready to bring him in. And the doctor's ready to operate. All of a sudden, he's called out on another emergency. And now the boy's on the bed. And he's thinking to himself, well, the rabbi said, this doctor. But now they bring in another doctor. And they tell him, don't worry. It's a doc. What's the difference between doctors? This doctor's just as good. He's just as qualified. And the guy's thinking to himself, well, I'm going to make a stink now. I'm going to get off the bed now. And say, I got to go. I can't. It's too late already. You know, I got the... And God forbid what happened, the operation was unsuccessful. Lo alechem. And in the Miri Yeshiva, this story used to be told over in Europe after it happened. And the Hachamim would comment and they'd say, it's hard to judge that boy because he was under pressure. But bottom line, one listened and one didn't listen. And the one that listened to what the rabbi said, he said, this doctor, so he knew what he was talking about. There was a reason why he said it. It wasn't just haphazard. You can't take the advice lightly. You can't take it with a grain of salt. So when they say it, they know it. There's a reason. You might have said, he didn't mean it. It was just, you think you understand it. But when they give instructions and they give advice, the advice is measured. The advice is tailor-made. It's custom-made. And therefore, God forbid, if we should sway from their advice, then already the consequences could be severe. And that's exactly what we learn from the lesson of Yaakov. He knew what he was doing. Don't think he's an old man, blind. His grandchildren come in front of him and he's, cross-eyed that he can't see. He tells his son, Yadati bini, Yadati. I know much clearer than what you think. I know exactly what I'm doing. I'm giving the berachot to they deserve to be given to. And what was the blessing? The blessing that he gave his children was that, boys, you are going to be the example when parents are going to come bless their children, they're going to use your names in the blessing. They're going to bless their children on Friday nights and say, Yisimecha Elohim ke Ephraim v'chemnashe, as we do. On Friday night, our custom is that the father and the mother, they bless their children, their boys, that may you grow up to be like Ephraim and Menashe. It's very interesting. There's so many great leaders in our people. Our religion is filled with great personalities. Maybe grow up to be like Moshe Rabbeinu. Anything wrong with that? Grow up to be like an Avraham Abinu or Yehuda or Yosef HaSadiq. Look at these two boys over here. They have immortality. Every child is blessed. You should grow up to be like Menashe and Ephraim. Like Ephraim and Menashe. What's the Hadush? Last year I think we explained, which I think is the most beautiful of explanations. If you look throughout history, anytime you see in the Torah brothers, you saw fighting. From the beginning of time, Cain and Hevel, the first brothers in history, they fought, Cain killed Hevel. And then you move on to the story of the brothers themselves, Yosef and the Shevatim, and there was jealousy and they took their brother and they sold him and they threw him in a pit, etc. Throughout the Torah we read of, unfortunately, acrimony amongst brothers. And all of a sudden you have a story of Menashe and Ephraim. Ephraim's the youngest son, gets the primary blessing. Menashe, so to speak, gets less. And what's Menashe's reaction? Nothing. There's no resentment. He doesn't hold a grudge. He doesn't plot to kill him. Menashe and Ephraim are brothers that got along. That brothers that knew that life isn't always equal. Not everybody gets the same. Not everybody gets exactly, you got one, we give you one. It doesn't always work out that way in siblings and children and brothers. Sometimes one gets a little more. One gets a little less. Somebody gets a better job. Somebody that's not fortunate gets less of a job. Somebody lives on a certain block. Somebody has to live on a different block. Nothing's fair. Nothing's equal. But unfortunately, those little things, marriage, one wife, he gets a different wife, a better, a less, those things break people apart. There's jealousy. Why did he get this one? I didn't get that one. It's not fair. I'm not talking to him. The greatness of Menashe and Ephraim was that Menashe got less. And he said, this is Nasib, this is from Borei Olam, what am I going to do? This is my lot, this is from Borei Olam, it's not Ephraim's fault. I have no claims, and they got along. I ask you, is there a better blessing we can give our children on Friday nights? That we tell our boys, you should grow up without any jealousy. You should grow up accepting whatever lot you get, and not having any claims against your brother, and not holding a grudge against him, whatever. Borei Olam should give you everything. But if it's not exactly equal, if the scale is tilted to the advantage of one, accept it. You should be like Ephraim and Menashe. But I want to say a different explanation today. To me, that's the most beautiful explanation. But we may say a different explanation. Ephraim and Menashe were two different personalities. Ephraim was a learner of Torah. It says every day for 17 years when his grandfather came down to Egypt, Ephraim would study with his grandfather. He'd visit him every day and sit with him and learn. Menashe, of course, studied Torah, but he was more in the world. He worked with his father in the palace. He was the interpreter for Yosef when they were having that whole discussion with the brothers and Yosef. He was the interpreter. He had a more public role. He was in society. He was in the business. He was with government people. He was talking with people. He was out in the real world. While Ephraim was more in the Torah world. Who's right and who's wrong? They're both right. Our children have to be balanced. Everybody wants our children to be successful in the business world or in the professional world, whatever it might be. We want our children to get a good education. We want our children to be successful outside in order to make a living. This is no question about it. We want our children to be like Menashe. But on the other hand, we have to remember, we also have to demand from our children to be like Ephraim also. All business, all money, all success without learning, without studying Torah, without religion, it's very dangerous. And as a matter of fact, probably as parents, our first priority has to be that our children are grounded religiously. We have to tend to their religious needs as well as their physical needs, but the priority has to be on their religious needs. And therefore we bless our children. Yesimecha Elohim ke Ephraim v'chem Menashe. You should grow up to be like Ephraim and Menashe. We're blessing. We want you to be have the best of both worlds. We want you to be like Ephraim, meaning you study Torah, you learn, you're dedicated to the books. And also be like Menashe also. You go to work, you be successful, you go to the market, you're in the real world. But we remind our children, Ephraim's first. Ephraim and then Menashe. Our priority is that you have a religious foundation, and that is the priority in life. Specifically, when our children are young, it's important to put them on this path that they should get used to this life of Ephraim as well as Menashe. Torah then goes on to tell us when Yaakov Abinu starts to bless his children. Actually, if you look at the blessings are not blessings like you should have a lot of money, you should live to 120. That's the type of blessings we're used to hearing. These blessings were more, he was telling them about themselves. Reuven, you don't deliberate enough, you have no patience. Shimon and Levi, you have a short temper. Yehuda, you have a trait to be a king. He went through all of them, and he discussed their character traits with them. And I saw from one of the rabbis that if you notice in the pasuk that introduces the blessings of Yaakov to his children, the pasuk calls Yaakov, Yaakov and Yisrael. It calls him both names. And Yaakov blessed his children, and Yisrael said to his sons. And I heard that the difference between the two names is Yaakov was the name that he got at birth. At birth, the child is just a bundle of potential. We don't know what's going to be with this child. He has potential, but it didn't come out yet. That's Yaakov. Yisrael is the name that was given to him after he achieved. After his potential came to fruition. After already he was accomplished. Now already he's called Yisrael. And therefore Yaakov Abinu, those two names are mentioned. He was telling his children, this is your potential. This is what you have in you. This is what you're capable of doing. And now go, after I gave you your analysis, what you're capable of doing, now I charge you and go and do it. And go be successful. Just look at me. I started off Yaakov. I wasn't great. They called me Yaakov because I was holding on to my brother's heel. But look, I was able to elevate myself and take the gifts and the talents that God gave me, and I was able to change myself and to be calling Yisrael, which was an upgrade. And therefore he was telling his children, he was describing their character, and he was blessing them, may you fulfill their potential, your skills, your strengths. He was telling them, be what you can be. And that's the greatest blessing we can give our children also. Unfortunately, parents, many times, they don't explore their children. They wish for their children to fulfill, not the children's aspirations, but the parents' aspirations. Parents have dreams, maybe dreams that they weren't able to fulfill, and therefore they want it in their children. But not always is the parents' aspirations good for the child. It's incumbent upon it, but Yaakov didn't, Yaakov could have said, you know what, boys, all the boys come in the room at one shot, I'm going to give you a standard blessing. You should all be successful, you should all grow to be Tamid Yaakamim, and good luck to all of you. He didn't do that. He took each one into the room, psychoanalyzed them, looked at them, now your strength is this over here. Now the blessing is that they had a father that was able to pinpoint and tell them what they're good at and where they should put their focus. That's already a blessing in itself. There are people that are 50 and 60 years old yet and still didn't figure themselves out yet. They don't know exactly what they're good at, what they should be doing, what they shouldn't be doing. It's a blessing to know at a young age what you were meant, what you were brought onto this earth to do. To know exactly, not everybody's supposed to be a rabbi, not everybody's supposed to be a doctor. But God bless a person at a young age already that can be told by others, because it's not always able to figure it out yourself, it's not so easy, by a parent who that's his job and her job, to see this child over here, he has a knack at music. They direct him. This child over here has a good voice. We can direct him. He has a good brain. He's good at problems, whatever it is. But if a parent says, forget about it. Put that on the side. This is what I want you to do. So then maybe the parent stifled the child. And therefore the greatness of Yaakov's blessing is that he was able to tap into each son what they were good at and what they were gifted in. And he worked on that and he tried to bring it out. To fulfill not his aspirations, but theirs. And then we get to the story of the burial of Yaakov Avinu. The burial of Yaakov Avinu was very interesting. What happened was, they got to the Ma'arat HaMachpelah, there was a whole entourage, the whole family was there. And who met them at the Ma'arat HaMachpelah? None other than Esav. He was waiting there. And he says, fellas, what are you doing here? So what are you talking about? We came to bury our father. It's Ma'arat HaMachpelah. So Esav says, what are you talking? This doesn't belong to you. This is mine. I might have sold some things to Yaakov with the first ride, the birthright and all that, but this I didn't give up. This is my spot over here. I'm going to be buried over here. And they came along and they started arguing. What are you talking about? This doesn't belong to you. We have a deed. We have the title. Don't you remember you sold this to our father also? I never sold it. Back and forth. And as they're arguing, one of the brothers said, wait, we have the deed in Egypt. Well, let's go get the deed. Let's go find it. How are we going to get back to Egypt now? We just got here. So they said, Naftali, we have a speedrunner in the family. Naftali, you go back to Egypt. You bring back the deed. The whole negotiations back and forth. In the meanwhile, one of the grandchildren of Yaakov was standing there. His name was Hushim. He was the son of Dan. Hushim's standing there, and he asks, he says, what's going on over here? What's all this tumult? What's all this back and forth? So they communicate to him. They say, well, listen, you know, he's claiming it's his, and it's really not. We're going to wait for the deed. So Hushim flipped out. Hushim said, we have to wait now for a deed to come back from Egypt, and in the meantime, my grandfather's going to be lying over here in disgrace? What kind of business over here? You never hold up a funeral for anything. The time of the funeral is the funeral. We're going to wait now? He picked up a club, and he went and hit Esav over the head and killed him. And they buried Yaakov. So they all ask a question. Who's this guy Hushim? We never heard of this guy Hushim before. All of a sudden now, he saved the day. Where was everybody else? Well, he was the only courageous one. He picked up a club. Well, you don't think the Shevatim were powerful? They were all giants. They weren't afraid of Esav. They knew that Esav was playing games. Esav's stalling around. He's playing games. Oh, it's mine. I own it. He's continuing in his wicked ways. The brothers should have taken Esav, throw him across the street. Get out of here. Don't be interrupting the funeral. No, we need this guy Hushim out of left field. Comes with a baseball bat and kills Esav. Where'd he come from? So the explanation they say is, Hushim was death. And that's why he was able to do what he did. Why? The nature of things is, when you start to argue and get into an argument, so you forget sometimes what the priority is, and now you get so caught up in the argument, he said, I have to answer. Oh, now you have the rebuttal? No, but that's not true because we have it. And then you start, then the argument takes a life on its own, and now already you forget exactly what you came here to do. Now you're defending yourself, now you're wrong, now you're right, now it's a back and forth. You know, it's like the people that came to make the peace treaty, and all the heads of state are sitting at the table, and they start arguing with themselves. You know, one guy says, what are we sitting on a square table for? It's not fair. And the guy says, no, square table is good. And the guy says, no, we need a rectangle. No, the guy says, no, we need an oval table. They're arguing, world leaders are trying to make peace, and they got caught up now, and they're arguing what type of table should they sit around in order to make the peace. And that becomes now the subject. Everybody figure out, hold it, time out, what are we doing over here for? What are we doing? We were crazy, we came to make peace, we're arguing about a table? So that's what happened to the brothers. The brothers got sucked into the argument. You know, a debate is, it's appetizing, it's luring, you know, especially if you have the right answers. So they said, all right, he says this, I will answer him back, you know what you're talking about. He comes back, no, but it's this, well, but we have an answer for that also. And they started. Hushim was pure. Hushim doesn't hear anything. Hushim didn't become prejudiced or biased to an argument. He doesn't hear anything. He just sees hands waving in the air, and he sees his grandfather lying there. So he was still able to maintain sensitivity. His feelings were pure feelings because he didn't get colored by the argument. He didn't get involved and enveloped in the action. And that's why the brothers, they got caught up. Now we'll bring it back. We'll prove you're wrong. You don't know what you're talking about. Hoshim said, what are you guys? You lost yourselves? This is what's going on over here. I just see clarity. I see my grandfather lying over here without being buried. And this guy's causing trouble. Dog, he killed him. The lesson Hachamim learned from here is twofold. Number one, unfortunately, today the media is saturated with all accounts of violence and scandals. And maybe the first time we read about a criminal committing a heinous crime, so maybe we were affected. Maybe we said, wow, this is terrible, this is a travesty, this is wrong. But we got so used to hearing about violence, and we got so used to hearing about bad news, that we became immune to such things. If we hear about a criminal that did something wrong to us, it's like bad weather. It doesn't affect us so much, you know, it doesn't bother us so much. We lost our sensitivity to evil because it just became, you know, we got used to it, they got involved in it. And therefore, the Torah is coming to tell us, Hushim was pure. Hushim did not get dulled. His senses might have been impaired, but because of that, he had a pure attitude. He didn't get caught up in the argument, and he got used to arguing, and then forgot about the priority. But there's another lesson you learn. Look how capable the children and grandchildren of Yaakov Abinu were. And at the end of the day, who saved the day? A handicapped child. From here you come and learn, what does it mean, the power of even a handicapped child. Unfortunately, parents that have to endure children that are disabled, this is very comforting for them. That they say, look, at the end of the day, all the strong ones, all the smart ones, all the capable ones, all the talented ones, all the blessed ones, they don't know anything. They couldn't make the deal. They couldn't bury their grandfather and their father. The day was saved by a child that was deaf, by a child that was the... might have been the underdog. Nobody would have thought before going into this funeral ceremony, Hushim's going to save the day. Well, miskin, Hushim, he can't hear. We have to help him. We have to bring him. We have to take him. He's not the one that can do anything for his family. So that's going out. So he says, no, you never know. Every child is important. Every child has a potential. Every child has a capability. And the Torah goes out of its way to give credit to this child because of what he did. One last idea. In the blessings of Yaakov to his children, one of the sons' name was Yisachar. Yisachar receives a blessing that he's going to be somebody that accomplishes and is successful in the realm of Torah. And the Pasuk writes about Yisachar, Vayar menuha ki tov, Vayetchech mo lisbol. And Yisachar is going to see that menuha is good, that taking a rest and relaxation is good. He's going to see menuha. Menuha is a rest. He's going to see the value of resting and enjoying. And you know what he's going to do as a result? He's going to work harder. And the rabbis all say, what do you mean? If it's like a person sees the enjoyment of retirement, and he sees the benefits of retirement, so what does he do? He takes a second job. It doesn't make sense. It should say, and he saw the value of relaxation, so he just sat all day long and enjoyed. Is there a connection between minuha, peace of mind and relaxation and work? And the rabbis come and tell you, yes indeed. True peace of mind and true relaxation of spirit and body only can come through accomplishment. Although we're taught the opposite in our country, that if the person reaches 65 years old, finished, you don't have to work anymore, sit home, and we find something amazing in most of these people that retire at this age, they become bored. But they become bored immediately. Where are they going to fill their time? They have to go find things to do. These are people that were going and running and doing and buying and selling, even getting on a train, going back and forth to the city, standing in a store, doing something. And now they have nothing to do and they start to feel empty. Human beings were not created to relax. Our relaxation comes through accomplishment. And that's exactly what the Pasuk is saying. The Pasuk is saying, he saw that there's no better feeling than peace of mind. So he said, how do I get it? Go to work. Go do something. Go build something. Go create something. And this is a concept to remember. Bezrat Hashem, many of our people are now going to go on vacations. Vacations are good to take from time to time, there's no question about it. Many of my rabbis said that in our generation, it always becomes mandatory to take a break from time to time because of the pressures and the stresses that many of us are under. So it's good to shake it up a little, change the schedule, change the environment, get a different, to air ourselves out in order to come back. It can be justified. But just think to yourselves, and I know this is true. After a few days, maybe it's everybody has a different threshold, 3 days, 4 days, 6 days, 7 days, 8 days, after a while there comes a point where you want to get back. And you think to yourself, what's to get back? You're sitting under a palm tree, enjoying yourself, the weather's beautiful, everything's nice, you're being tended to, the service, there's nothing, you're relaxing. What's the urge of people that we have to get back to what? To the freezing cold, to the parking, to the errands, to the house. Who needs it to stay there? Well, let's come back. But most normal people, after a certain time, already their threshold for vacation ends, and they have to get back. And it's exactly what we're talking about. Because that's not the normal nature of a person just to sit and do nothing all day long. There's a certain amount of time that you could be without achieving anything. There's a certain amount of time that you could just lay without any accomplishment. And after that time is up, then already the neshama, or the what's inside of you, the conscience, whatever you want to call it, says, you got to do something. It becomes counterproductive. We become unhappy. We can't do anything. And now we come back, then you went shopping for the first time, went to the grocery store. Oh, you did something. You accomplished, you're buying, you're making a dinner. It sounds strange, but this is exactly true. The best feeling people will have is after a project is completed, or while you're in a project and you're successful at it. There's no feeling like that. That feeling is much more pleasurable than sitting on a lounge chair and just relaxing. I agree, we need that from time to time in order to regain our strength, in order to get our koach, there's no question. But there's a limit on that. Life is not a vacation. The vacations come from time to time. It's like a coffee break. Does a person come to work and sit and drink coffee all day long and work in between the coffee breaks? Of course not. He goes to work, so he has a ride from time to time to take a coffee for 5 minutes to relax in order to go back to work. But a person doesn't come home from work and say, you know what, I drank 16 cups of coffee today. Unbelievable. I feel great. Well, you feel great. Who feels great? 16 cups of coffee. That's not your accomplishment. Your accomplishment is what you did. Look what I helped. Look what I bought. Look what I sold, etc. Look who I helped. Look at the project that I built. And that's an idea that your lady should also keep in mind when we go on our vacations, that this is only a temporary respite in order to come back and to continue our main mission in life. Today we see, going over, but to me it's a phenomenon. I haven't figured out this phenomenon yet, and I'm sure somebody will explain it to me, because I know our people are very smart, But we're seeing a phenomenon now that many people in the middle of their lives, not in an old age, not at the end of their lives, when they worked and they accomplished, people in the midst of their lives and their primes are now moving away and going, and the addiction of Turnberry, which I always joke about, I have nothing against it, my family's all there also, and everybody's doing. But when that becomes a goal in itself, that any free moment that we have just to go and sit and relax, this is already counterproductive to what human beings are. I understand somebody 70, 80 years old wants to sit. He earned it already. He's tired. Maybe he's not. And even then, they have to keep busy. But to retire so young, to such a life of just playing games all day long, and already it might be a little premature. You forgive me. This is only a thought. This you could take with a grain of salt, what I'm saying. I haven't thought it out so good. But that's my gut feeling. Why would you want to be less productive before you have to? If old age puts us into a state where we have to be less productive, so be it. But why put ourselves into a retirement? For what purpose? Why, every moment we have, you're accomplishing, Baruch Hashem. We're raising children. And now this becomes more important to sit on a loud chair and raise our children, that already we became a little skewed. That means the craze, it's a craze. We became crazed by such a thing, and all our priorities. I told you many times, a girl comes to her mother and says, "Mommy, good news, I'm expecting. When you do, Pesach, Pesach! Didn't you think? We're going to be, you want to go away, Pesach? You killed the whole trip now. Now we have to stay in Brooklyn. What are you doing to us?" What happened over here? This is raising children now became second important to a trip for golfing and for playing games, sitting by a pool. Everything in the right priority. This is more important to raise your grandchildren, to see your grandchildren, to spend time with your families. There's a need for that also, but in its proper proportion. You know, there's a need for salt in food, but how much salt are you going to put in the food? Everything in measure. But once we go a little extreme in it, then already it throws off the whole chemistry of life, and it doesn't bring happiness. It's not going to bring happiness. We're going to spend, and we're going to build. No, we're still looking. We're still searching. We're not happy yet. Why are you not happy? Look, we built it. We did. We're sitting. We're drinking martinis by the pool. We're not happy. We need to be doing. We need action. We need to have achievements. And therefore, like I said, Baruch Hashem, we're young. We have strength. We should continue achieving. That's building your homes, building your families, building our community, doing for others, working for organizations, doing volunteer work. All that will make you happy. All that will make you feel good. And Be'ezrat Hashem will have strength and sanity. We'll go away on our vacations. We'll come back in strength and peace. Amen.